The Joker Went Wild, this great cover of Curtis Mayfield's Gypsy Woman, produced by Del Shannon. We're talking about music maker Brian Hyland, who joins us this afternoon here on Downtown. Let's start at the beginning. You were born in New York, in Queens, at a time when New York City was really the capital of the popular music industry in America.
Yes, it was pretty much the expansion out to the West Coast was like a couple of years into the future at that time.
And as a young guy, you learned to play instruments, so you started doing some singing. And what were you, about 13 or 14 when you formed the Delphi's?
Somewhere around there. It was an influence from in New York City. Doo-wop groups were the thing, and everybody wanted to be in a doo-wop group. In my high school, there was a lot of different doo-wop groups, and that was just the thing.
So you got to record a demo, but you didn't get a record deal, but you drew the attention somehow of the people at Cap Records. How did that happen?
Well, the demo, we went over to the Brill Building with that. You know, we didn't know where to go, or we just would knock on doors. And for about 6 months or so, I was working with this arranger up in the Brill Building in Sammy Kaye's office. And then I cut a demo for their publishing company. They took the demo around to get somebody to record it. Eventually, they brought it over to Cap Records, and Cap Records liked the demo, and they said, "Who's singing on that?" And I said, "That's Brian Hyland. He's our office boy." So then they said, "Yeah, we like his voice," and they wanted to record that as a master recording, which we did, and that was my first record.
Was that Rosemary?
Correct. That was the Rosemary. Then, I guess a couple of months later, they said, "Oh, let's do another one." And we had the B-side. And then at the last minute, I got a phone call and they said, "We found this really cool song." And I went over to Manhattan and listened to it. And the song was "Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini."
And that worked out pretty well. At 16 years old, you're on the top of the charts. You're on TV doing Dick Clark, American Bandstand, and you're everywhere. How do you adjust to going from a regular high school student in New York to all of a sudden being the toast of the music world?
Well, it was the people in the music business, because I had a number one record, they treated me like I'd been in the business for years. And so I guess in that way, it made it easy for me.
Now, you ended up, if I remember the story right, changing high schools after that, going to a school for the arts. And did I read along the way that one of your classmates was Patty Duke?
That's correct. Yeah, Patty Duke. And also Jay Traynor from Jay and the Imagineers.
Oh, yeah.
He was there. And I think at some point or another, Gregory Hines was there. And there was a lot of different people going in and out of there. And It was a nice experience.
And then you went over to ABC Paramount and did some really terrific records with them. Top 20 hit with Let Me Belong to You, and then another monster hit in 1962 with Sealed with a Kiss.
That's correct. I did the those were the recording sessions I did with Gary Geld and Petey Udell as the producers, and they were also the writers. Starting off with Let Me Belong to You, and then in 1962, right around this time, Seal with a Kiss came out, and it took off.
Now, were you doing any writing at that time, or just focusing on singing the songs they brought to you?
No, I wasn't writing at all at that point in time, no. But, it was until when the Beatles started having a big success, everybody thought, well, maybe I can write songs too, because they wrote, played on the session, they did everything, and that was like an innovation, except for Buddy Holly and the Crickets. I started writing later on.
And I think I read along the way, like so many, you were influenced by Elvis when you first saw him on television. It was your dad, too, that was pretty impressed with him.
That's correct. Yeah, we were just watching this show on I can't remember what the season it was or anything, but we were watching it, and all of a sudden they said, "And here's the new Sensation, and Elvis came on, and my dad, after he was doing a couple of tunes, my dad said, "This guy's great," and it impressed me, and I thought, "Yeah, he is," and I liked the sound of the his band and the whole thing. It was fantastic.
Well, in those days, of course, the way to get seen by fans was to go on these package tours, and you ended up on a big one, one of the Dick Clark caravans along the way. And there's a remarkable story I know you've told before. You had been in Wichita, and I believe you traveled all night long to get to Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, and you ended up actually seeing President Kennedy's motorcade.
Yes. That was a Dick Clark tour with a lot of different people on that. Bobby V was one of the headliners on that. And I saw I saw them go by. I was up there on that street, and I went in to buy a pair of socks or jeans, I can't remember, at Neiman Marcus, and a couple of blocks later they made that turn into Dealey Plaza, and that everybody knows what happened. Mm-hmm. It was the worst in Dallas. It was really a terrible day, and the following morning I looked out and I thought, did that really happen? When you wake up, I was dreaming, and I just woke up and I looked out and I saw flags at half mast, and I realized that it did happen.
Did you have to do a show that night?
No. The show was canceled, and we went on to Oklahoma, I think, for the next couple of shows. And so we were off for that for the day that the concert was supposed to be, and then I think the following day was a travel day, and then we were up in Oklahoma.
You wrote a really powerful song about that day and the experience as well, called Mail Order Gun.
Well, you know what? That song isn't really about that. I got that idea for that title from when I saw about the how he got the gun to shoot President Kennedy, and it was a mail order rifle, and I thought that's kind of a weird thing, a mail order gun, and so. And then I wrote this song, but it was totally about something else.
Now, 1964, you recorded an album, and it wasn't a big hit for you, but with Country Meets Folk, well, you were way ahead of your time before anybody thought of bringing folk and country and rock music together, and you continue to explore a lot of different genres throughout your career.
Yeah, I was always, I heard music on the, when I would travel on the road, I heard different radio stations, that you wouldn't hear in New York City. So I guess I was influenced by that, and I always liked the guitar sound on the country records. And there was also a station down in Wheeling, West Virginia, WWVA.
Oh yeah, we used to pick that up here in Maine. We could get that on a skip.
Yeah, I know. It was a powerful signal, and it got all around.
It's it's remarkable too. We've talked about that here on the show before, that was such a part of America that you don't get anymore, that as you travel the country, you'd hear these different sounds, music that you wouldn't hear in other regions as you travel. And even the guys on the radio, they had a distinctive accent based on where they were before everybody sounded the same and played the same thing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And for instance, in Chicago, it was a lot of jazz stations, Chicago jazz, and you get in there in that vicinity, and they were just kind of local channels, local stations, and and then there was the real 50,000 watt stations, and I'm telling you, you know all this, that's your business, but there was one up in Buffalo, there was one I think in Chicago, one in Oklahoma City, and then you had Wolfman Jack down there in.
Right.
In Tijuana or wherever that was.
Well, and you grew up listening to Alan Freed, right?
That's right. I listened to Alan Freed on WINS in New York.
We're talking with Brian Hyland here on Downtown. You had great success in the mid-60s, too, getting together with producer Snuff Garrett for The Joker Went Wild and a number of other recordings.
Yeah, that was the sessions I did with Snuff Garrett, and Leon Russell was the arranger on that one that you mentioned, The Joker Went Wild. And that was my first recording session in California also.
And was it out there that you first met and began working with Del Shannon?
I met Del Shannon in 1961 when his first record was out, Runaway, and I think he had Hats Off to Larry. That was, I think they were back to back. And and I met him then, and we did a tour in 1962, and sort of, you know, we were friends all through the 60s, but and didn't do a lot of shows with him. But at a certain point, I moved out to California, and I started writing songs with Del.
And you guys had a number of songs that you written together, but if I remember right, you wanted to hedge your bets and make sure you had something that the record company would like, and you took the Curtis Mayfield song, Gypsy Woman, and man, what a great record that turned out to be.
Thank you. That was just at the last minute kind of thing, you know, of those kind of things happen. And we just were thinking, well, if these other songs don't come out too good, we can we'll have an oldie in there. And it really wasn't that old at the time. And it turned out to be the one.
Now, was it George Tipton that did the string arrangements for that?
Correct. He did the string arrangements. And he was he did a really nice job because I think we just gave him a little hint. We said we want something that sounds kind of mysterious, and so he arranged it in that way. It was nice.
Well, you know, we play a lot of songs from the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s here on the station, and that's one of those songs. It's 52 years old now, but that song comes on, it sounds as fresh today as it did in 1970.
Yeah, it's the song itself is very visual, and you can put yourself right into that scene. It's one of those songs. Just has it.
Now, like a lot of people, you had a resurgence in the 1980s. A part of it was when Albert West recorded some of your music and got you to record with him, but also as CDs came along and they started to package some of the early hits of the rock and roll era, all of a sudden a new generation discovered your music.
Yeah, you know, I think with CDs coming out, when everything became digital, they transferred everything onto digital format, and the music sounded good, sounded better, because all those old albums were getting kind of worn out, and the 45s that they would play at radio stations, then all of a sudden, with CDs, you're actually hearing it like people heard it in the control room when it was actually recorded, because there wasn't any, you know, transferring it onto a disc and a stamper and all the different processes that go with making a record from, all those in-between steps.
We're talking with Brian Hyland here on Downtown. So, Brian, I know you're out there still making music. What have you been up to lately?
Well, actually, Rich, I got married last year, and my wife is an author. She wrote a book called Kiss Me, Swami, the Spiritual Education of a Beauty Queen. Her name is Kathleen, and we got married last year. And also, I have a new record out, and it's not a record, but it's up on Spotify and Apple Music. And it's the song Mr. Blue, and people can listen to it. It's also up on YouTube. So,
and it's a terrific arrangement. It's the old song from 1958 or 59, I think, from the Fleetwoods. But you've got a great new arrangement of it.
Thank you, Rich. Well, I just wanted to, it's been great talking to you, and it's a pleasure.
Absolutely, and people can go to your website, too, at brianhyland.com and find out what you're doing, check out music and appearances, and learn all they need to know about Brian. Been a fan of your music for a long time, Brian. We appreciate you talking with us this afternoon, and wish you good health and success going forward.
Thank you very much. And I just like to say it's been really great talking to you, and give my best to Stephen King.